Julius Evola, the Magic Baron. You may have heard his name, but what were his core ideas? In this video, I'm going to be going through 10 of his core ideas, and I'm going to be doing it in quite a brisk manner. Now, Evola wrote a lot of books. I've got all of his books there, or most of them, that have been translated into English. He wrote even more in his native Italian. I have published on Evola in this book here, The Prophets of Doom. There you can see him looking a little bit like Dracula. And, you know, he has quite a vast corpus. There is some complexity there, but I'm going to do my best to distill it down into 10 core ideas. So let's get going. So the 10 pillars of Evolian thought. The first idea, which is key to everything that he says, is that the modern world is a regression. For Evola, contemporary civilization is not progress, but catastrophic devolution, a descent from sacred hierarchical orders into abject materialism, fragmentation, and spiritual poverty. Modernity's celebrated achievements are, in his framework, symptoms of collapse rather than markers of advancement. For Evola, a well-ordered society that is healthy looks upwards to the divine, to the absolute, to the transcendent. Capital T tradition is always looking upwards to the transcendent. In the modern era, we have lost sight of that. We don't have any sight of it at all. In fact, our culture mocks such ideas. It is allergic to such ideas because its forces are devolving downwards, downwards from the divine to the base, to the lower orders, to your lower self. And what Evola wants is for everybody to embody their higher self. He argues that tradition is metaphysical and perennial. Capital T tradition for Evola is not historical nostalgia or a folk custom. You're not trying to get back to any particular time or place. You're trying to get back to a timeless, supra-historical body of spiritual principles, a metaphysical current running beneath all authentic civilizations. So the perennial part of his traditionalism, which could be controversial if you are dogmatic for a particular religion, is that all of the religions of the world ever are getting towards the same thing, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, all of the old Greco-Roman gods. They're all getting towards the same thing. These are local manifestations of, local understandings of, the same universal primordial truth. Evola was always looking for ways of accessing that primordial absolute. He mastered several different fields, including yoga. He got into magic and occultism. He got into all sorts of things, initiatory practices that are still trying to get towards this one capital T tradition. Tradition for Evola is accessible to the individual through initiation and inner discipline, not through what he called exoteric institutional religion or inherited culture alone. Where Evola departed from some other traditionalists, his great mentor was a man called René Guénon. They wrote lots and lots of letters to each other, Guénon and Evola. Unfortunately, we don't have Evola's letters to Guénon, but we do have Guénon's replies. So we know that they were in contact for many, many years. But one of their great disagreements was Guénon believed that you actually had to join an initiatory order, and that somebody had to initiate you into something. Evola believed you could actually self-initiate, you could go in alone. It was more difficult, but in this bankrupt modern world where most orders are corrupted by modernity, sometimes the only option is to go it alone. So that's one of the differences. Hierarchy is natural and sacred. Authentic social order for Evola flows from spiritual differentiation, not from economic function or democratic consensus. The fourfold caste structure of the priest, the warrior, the merchant, and the laborer mirrors a metaphysical reality in which qualitative differences are irreducible and sacred. And in Evola's conception, if you see these castes here, each one of these is in charge during particular phases. So in a golden age, in fact, not pictured here, but in the golden age, it is the solar masculine warrior priest. It's like the warrior and the priest in one who rules. You imagine him on the golden throne, okay, where he has martial virtue, but he's also spiritually wise and spiritually enlightened as well. And these two figures are embodied in one. Then for the Silver Age, it is the caste of the priests. Evola, believe it or not, is not that complimentary about the rule of priests. He believes that the priestly age, the Silver Age, tends to invert a lot of the things that were sacred in the Golden Age, whereas the solar masculine Golden Age is solar and masculine. The Silver Age is lunar and feminine, and all sorts of strange inversions come about. And in fact, those inversions end up being intolerable to those people with the masculine virtues. And so eventually they get overthrown, the priests, by the warriors who embody a Bronze Age spirit. Okay. And therefore you get the Bronze Age. Unfortunately, the warriors of the Bronze Age are not spiritually enlightened. They are mere brutes. They are merely warriors. Okay. So they don't have that kind of solar higher purpose. So therefore, the Bronze Age, while in some respects, Evola prefers the Bronze Age to the Silver Age, in other respect, it's lost that spiritual dimension, which is most important. Then you get a devolution downwards again from the age of the warriors to the age of the merchant. The merchant, it's, to quote the Wu-Tang Clan, cash rules everything around me. You know, we're back to, if you watch my Thomas Carlyle lecture, the cash nexus, you can see how money corrupts. You can actually see it in history. The feudal era, which was based on blood oaths, it was based on oaths taken, you know, knights and squires, or, you know, you take an oath to the king, not through money contact, through honor. That degenerated when money got involved. And instead of an honor oath, now a warrior fights for cash payment. And eventually the merchants take over. And I would argue that the merchants are still in charge in our current age. But there is, in fact, one further devolution downwards when the laborers actually take over. This is like an absolute doomsday scenario for Evola, because the people, I mean, this is basically your communist revolution. This is your communist revolution, if you want to put it that way. And, you know, they have no, there you have devolved right to the level of base materialism with no higher purpose, no higher values, no higher ideals, and no spiritual guiding star. So this is the descent downwards. Ideas 4 and 5 are the inversion of values and the critique of democracy. He argues that the West has inverted all of its own values, that modernity elevates the merchant and the mass, the lowest spiritual castes, whilst oppressing the warrior and the priestly nobility. Commerce, consumption, and the reign of quantity, a phrase taken from Guinon, replace honor, contemplation, and quality. He also, as a related critique, says that democracy is an anti-traditional force. Egalitarianism, in Evola's view, is not a neutral political preference, but a metaphysical error. By denying qualitative human differences, democracy actively dismantles the natural order of rank. One of the ideas that Evola was obsessed with, really, was the differentiated man, the person of excellence, the person of supreme ability. And how can that person self-actualize and flourish and embody his or her best self? And for Evola, the force of egalitarianism tends to level downwards. It tends to homogenize. It tends to knock out the qualitative differences between people. And so people end up being cookie cutter. He doesn't want the cookie cutter, because he says that's not like the mark of a society that is healthy, is one that gives people the tools to embody their best selves, rather than the kind of treating people as if they're eggs in a carton. He argues that the state should be an organic hierarchy. I'll just get myself out of the way here so you can see this. In Evola's ideal polity, authority is not derived from the consent of the governed, but descends from above. And from above, he means from God, okay, or from the absolute, or from the divine, whichever way, from the transcendent beyond. The ruler embodies the transcendent spiritual principles rather than popular mandate. His key distinctions or things that you have to understand, because when you start reading around Evola, you know, it won't take long before somebody accuses him of being a fascist. Evola was deeply critical of Benito Mussolini, who he lived under in the fascist state in Italy. He was alive and well and writing at the time. He was persecuted for a time by Mussolini for some of his earlier writings. He argued that the fascist state in Italy was insufficiently spiritual. It was excessively collectivized. It was a mass workers' movement. It didn't have any of these aristocratic principles that he was talking about. And he actually wrote a whole book on this called Fascism Viewed from the Right. And it's also important to note that Evola was not really a nationalist either. The organic state transcends ethnic particularity. It is a spiritual and not a biological formation. So you can see why, you know, even though Evola has some fans on the right, he also has some critics, especially in that era. We'll get on to some of his ideas about spirituality and race in a second. Another really important idea for Evola is that revolt against the modern world is possible. Ride the tiger, he says. Evola's counsel for the individual who cannot reverse civilizational decay. So there's a part of this is inevitable. There's nothing you can actually do about it. But you can refuse to be consumed by it. You know, there are all of these low forces all around us. There's all of the negative, almost demonic forces of modernity all around us. How do you keep yourself as the aristocrat of the soul? How do you stop yourself being drawn down by it all? And, you know, if you're interested in that, you know, I have recently been making lots of videos along these lines. I've put them all on this side channel here called Academic Agent Mindset, you know, and new ones are being added all the time. So if you really want to know how to be your best self in modernity, check that out. Or if you still like playing video games, you can watch Academic Agent Gaming. So, yeah, revolt against the modern world is possible. It's difficult. Not everybody's going to make it. This is something you have to understand with Evola. He wasn't writing for everybody. He was writing for those people who've got the will, the determination, the spirit to try to make it despite against all odds. And in a way, Evola is actually quite an empowering thinker because he encourages you to be like, look, you don't have to be like everyone else just because all of your friends are doing this or just because everybody else is in this stream. You don't have to be that. You can be the differentiated man alone. Even if it's lonely, you will get there if you embody these spiritual principles that I'm trying to teach you. So I think Evola, is a powerfully uplifting writer if read in the correct way. If you truly understand what he's getting at, he is not. I mean, people love to use the phrase black pill. In a strange way, Evola is a covert provider of white pills, not on the level of political change, but on the level of personal development, or what people call now self-actualization. Even within the ruins of modernity, Evola argues, certain individuals, those of sufficient spiritual substance, can achieve inner sovereignty. This is not political revolution, but a disciplined aesthetic orientation towards transcendent principles. And, you know, I've been reading Evola long enough and have been influenced enough that I have done my best to try to follow this path as well I can. Not perfect by any means. None of us are. But you will still feel better trying to do it than not. It will make you stronger because, you know, where things are headed, you need to be strong. He argues that race has a spiritual dimension. Evola's conception of race is tripartite and explicitly anti-biological in its emphasis. Now, this was one of his more controversial books that he wrote, kind of less read these days, but it was important during his life because Mussolini was a fan of it. And Mussolini, this was the closest he ever got to, you know, Mussolini's regime. He was like, I'm going to try to make this a textbook. I'm going to make this like required reading. The book is called Synthesis on Race, I think it's called. Anyway, he argues in that book, Evola, that the body, soul, and the spirit are distinct racial levels, and the highest being the race of the spirit, which determines genuine nobility. So in this conception where there's the race of the body, you know, that's, you know, trivial things really, like your skin color and, you know, maybe some of your physical abilities and things like that. There's then the race of the soul, the psychological and characterological types, but then the race of the spirit, the highest level of spiritual orientation and metaphysical quality. Now, where this is distinctly Evolian and different from many other people who've talked about race is that Evola actually believed that you could actually embody the spirit of different races, that even though you could be a white man, you could, you know, become quote-unquote spiritually black, or vice versa, you could be a black guy who's kind of spiritually white. And where this is kind of interesting is that in kind of modern culture war stuff, you do see these accusations flung around. You sometimes see kind of racialist types on the right accusing other white people of behaving like black people, and you will also see black people occasionally accusing you so white. Do you remember all that sort of stuff? Or somebody like Thomas Sowell, right, has been accused of being spiritually white or being like an apologist for the white man and things like that. Now, obviously, they mean it on a much more mundane level than what Evola's talking about. But it's kind of interesting. So what he's saying is your spiritual core is not biologically locked in. Like, just because you're Italian, for example, or just because you're British – doesn't mean you're going to embody the best of what that race has to offer, which for him would be the chivalric spirit. It would be the you know, it's that solar, masculine, Hyperborean, you could say, spirit, right? Being your best self. But it's like, well, you know, for everyone looking around, he's like, well, look, none of you are living up to that ideal. You're spiritually closer to these people or these people or these people. So that is interesting, to say the least. And of course, people who are more dogmatic and doctrinaire or into like scientific racism and things like that, disagree with Evalor on this. People on the left, of course, are just appalled by any kind of discussion of race. Well, certain liberals are, whereas more woke types, you know, they would probably be like, well, yeah, but, you know, this guy's probably a bit racist, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, let us move on. Idea 9 in Evalor is that history moves in cycles of decline. Drawing from Hindu cosmology, Evalor maps history onto the descending cycle of the four ages. And I've already mentioned this, when I talked about the four castes, because it's related, because who's on top tends to also dictate what age you're in. The pure spiritual authority of the Golden Age to the Kali Yuga. Now, you've probably heard this phrase over the years of the Kali Yuga. This is the dark age of materialism and dissolution. And we are living in the Kali Yuga, according to Evalor. The present epoch occupies the nadir of this cycle. So we're in the Kali Yuga. We're in the materialist age. We're in an age of egalitarianism, of inversion of normal values, of collapse. But the good news is that eventually the golden age is coming around the corner. Trouble is, we don't know exactly when that could be. It could be 100 years. It could be 1,000 years. It could be 5 years, because it's not quite clear exactly when the golden age will come. Whatever is more hopeful of is that, well, even though you're in the Kali Yuga, and even though it's difficult, right? So being in the golden age, surrounded by other enlightened beings, it was so much easier to be your best self and to, you know, reach transcendence and enlightenment. In the Kali Yuga, it's really difficult. Really, really difficult. You know, you've got endless distractions, video games, slop television, slop social media, politics, Trump said this, Trump said that. Oh, look at what's happened in the culture wars now. All that, you know, you've got all this crap around you, you know, endless cheap food, pizzas, McDonald's, fast cars, right? All of the trappings of modernity are all around you. So it's never been easier to be your lower self, to succumb to all of your lowest and base desires. But Evalor says, with enough willpower, with enough discipline, with enough spiritual training, you can actually overcome all of that, even in the Kali Yuga. So this is why I'm saying that Evalor is strangely more hopeful than he first appears, because he gives the individual great inner courage and inner steel. Finally, to get to this 10th idea, for a proper restoration, for the Golden Age to come again, for this age of the Kali Yuga to finally be subject to the dustbin of history, a spiritual aristocracy is required. Evalor is neither optimistic nor passively fatalistic. Reversal of the modern collapse demands a new elite, not a hereditary nobility, not technocratic managers, but individuals who have undergone genuine inner transformation and are grounded in traditional principles. Essentially, he wants an aristocracy of adepts, of enlightened adepts, is what it is, one way of putting it. Okay, not political, not hereditary, but initiatic, right? And genuinely enlightened, initiated spiritual beings. And when we can get to the point where we've got an elite who can embody those values, then, you know, the golden age has come again. Are we anywhere close to that? Well, no, no, we're nowhere near that right now. So the best you can hope for Evelyn is to ride the tiger, to be your best self, and to do your best to try to make this new spiritually enlightened type of person come about. And then maybe they could be that new elite class in the future. That's Evola in a nutshell. Now, there's lots and lots and lots of other ideas I did not get into over the course of this. I've only got 25 minutes, half an hour in these lectures. I wanted to give you a flavor of Evola. He's got lots of books that you can read. I would start with my little chapter here in The Prophets of Doom and then take my recommended reading from there. Pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Trivium is the bestseller. But most importantly of all, friends, get out. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.